coming today on Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast.
But I did find a study in South Carolina that said 1 in 8 inmates had been jailed for failure to pay child support. And another one in Georgia that over 35,000 parents were jailed in 2010 for non-payment of support.
Welcome to Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast with Rebecca Zung and Susan Guthrie.
This is the place to hear other people's stories, to learn from the top experts in every related field, and to also have some fun, laugh, and hang with two girlfriends who are also top family law litigators.
And now we invite you to listen to today's show.
It's going to inspire you to transform and break free.
Welcome to today's podcast. Our topic today is Betcha Didn't Know That You Can Go to Jail for Not Paying Your Alimony and Other Contempt Issues with Court. I'm Rebecca Zung.
And I'm Susan Guthrie. So recently I read an article that I was telling Rebecca about actor John Schneider, who some of us older folks might remember from Dukes of Hazzard fame. I read an article saying he had been sentenced to 3 days in jail for not paying over $150,000 in delinquent alimony. And I was thinking, well, isn't that just every, you know, recipient of alimony who's not getting their payment? Isn't that their dream? The idea of their ex sitting in a jail cell being punished for that non-payment. As we were talking about it, you know, we realized many people out there don't understand exactly what contempt of court means and just how complicated this issue can be from a legal perspective. So today we're going to be talking about contempt of court, the legal process and what that is. And we're also going to give you all the information you need to know if you find yourself on either side of the plate when it comes to the court's orders not being followed. First off, I would say this certainly goes along with my experience of the practice that most commonly you see people being jailed for non-payment, you know, actually going off in handcuffs out of a courtroom for non-payment in cases where child support's not being paid. I would say in my almost 30 years of practice, every case where I've had a client taken out in handcuffs or the other side of my case has been taken out in handcuffs has been for non-payment of child support. And I tried to find some national statistics on this. I really couldn't find anything nationally, but I did find a study in South Carolina that said 1 in 8 inmates had been jailed for failure to pay child support. And another one in Georgia that over 35,000 parents were jailed in 2010 for non-payment of support. So it's not an uncommon issue. You certainly do see it. I would say that although the non-payment of support is probably the most common reason for a finding of contempt in court, you know, a judge has the discretion to find someone in contempt of court almost any time that a court order is not being followed. But this can be where it starts to get complicated. That sounds really simple, but Rebecca, maybe you can explain generally, you know, what contempt of court is and what those elements are and how this starts to get complicated for people.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds really great to just, oh, I'm just sending that person to jail, no problem. But there's a lot of steps that have to be taken before you can get to that point, which is kind of funny to me in a way that so many people end up in jail because they will have known that that is an option many times over before they get to that point. And by the way, they only put people in jail if they think that they have the ability to actually pay and they just don't. So that's kind of like the layman's terms of it. But, you know, just kind of going through a little bit of the legal, there has to be an order of the court or a final judgment. You can't just be thrown in jail, you know, because somebody else said that you were supposed to pay or whatever. There has to be a court order or a final judgment or something on paper that the judge has ruled that this is the amount that has to be paid every month. And And I won't get into like, but I'll throw out these terms. There are terms out there that even I think a lot of lawyers don't understand, which is direct criminal contempt, indirect criminal contempt, you know, all sorts of different types of contempt. So I won't get into all of that because it gets really kind of dicey. But just understand, you have to have a court order or something where the judge has said, you must do this. So, and it has to be super clear. And so, you know, drafted by a lawyer would be a good idea, or drafted by somebody who knows what they're doing. Because I always tell people, when the judge goes to enforce an order, they have to know what it is that they are supposed to be enforcing. And so if it says, oh, you know, pay when you can, as much as you can, whenever, there's nothing that the judge can enforce. Or if it doesn't have any deadlines at all or due dates, pay $400, but there's no, it doesn't say monthly, it doesn't say by the first of the month or whatever, it has to be really, really clear. So the first part is really in the drafting and making sure that that's clear.
You know, Rebecca, that just brings to mind, I was thinking, one of the common terms that you see in court orders all the time is where someone will say, party A must pay to party B $100,000 within a reasonable time. And that's like, people are like, well, it's been 2 months, it's not reasonable. And I'm like, reasonable is subject to interpretation. That's not what you were just talking about, where the court order has to be clear. You know, the legal term is clear and unambiguous, right? I mean, there has to be an actual, must be paid within 30 days of the entry of this order or something.
Yeah, some deadline. Like give the judge the teeth that he or she is going to need in order to enforce it. Now, the thing is about not complying. So let's say somebody didn't comply. So the thing about the court system is that it's kind of black and white for the most part. So you can't come along and say, well, child support is $400 a month, but I, instead of paying the $400 a month, we had a side agreement that I would pay the health insurance premiums instead, and I would just pay daycare directly, and instead of paying child support. That won't fly, unfortunately. And whether you think that's fair or not, the judge is going to be looking for canceled checks that say child support on them.
In that amount.
Yeah. Where's your canceled check for the $400 a month or $1,000 a month or whatever the amount is? You better be able to prove up that you paid that every single month through canceled checks or through an automatic draft out of your bank account or whatever it is. They're going to be looking for that amount. So if you had some side agreement about daycare or whatever, then you're just, that's all extra. You still have to pay that support amount, whatever that was. So it's really easy for somebody to say, well, they didn't pay. And if you don't have a way to prove that you did, then, you know, you're going to have a problem.
On that issue, my best advice to clients has always been, if you have a child support order, especially, but even alimony or a spousal support, do not offset it with other payments. People do this all the time. It drives me crazy.
They think they're offsetting it and it cannot work that way. And you can't just decide, well, she owes me, you know, like say you have a pro rata split for extracurriculars and, you know, wife didn't pay her share of the pro rata split. So you can't just go ahead and say, well, then I'm deducting it from your alimony or child support and write a check for, you know, $30 less or whatever it is. You cannot do that. You still have to pay the full amount.
And you expose yourself to issues. If you can't, like Rebecca was saying earlier, you have to prove you paid what the court order was. So a check for $30 less than what the support order was supposed to be is a check that doesn't comply with the court order.
Correct. And you can't turn around and say, well, but she owed me $30 for, because I signed them up for soccer and it was $100 and we have a 70-30 split and I paid the whole thing. So she owed me the $30 for soccer. Well, you know, from the court's perspective, then you need to go and enforce the agreement for the extracurriculars that haven't been paid, not take license to, you know, get yourself paid back in whatever way you'd like to. And so that's what I mean when these things are interpreted really kind of black and white, that's what the court is going to do. So the failure to comply must be willful, meaning from the court's perspective, you just didn't pay. And a lot of times, by the way, in agreements, or depending on the statutes in your state, attorney's fees can be awarded for having to enforce these orders, which means, and I had a really good example of this one time. I had, my client was a hospital administrator and she was making probably $500,000 a year. The husband was a teacher and he was probably making $50,000 a year and hadn't paid his child support. And he had a motorcycle and he had a car and he had a 401k. And he was like, well, that's all I've got. I don't have anything else. Well, the court saw that as you've got assets and you're not paying your child support. So you got to pay. And by the way, because their agreement said that if either side had to enforce because the other side defaulted on the contract in some way, then the defaulting party had to pay both sides' fees. He had to pay my fees. And he was not happy about it. But, you know, is that or jail?
Add insult to injury. Not only are you in contempt, but you're going to pay the other side's attorney fees.
Exactly. And it was that or jail for him. Yeah.
So that's a pretty extreme case, like you were saying earlier. You know, those aren't the cases you see every day. And that had to be something he knew was a possibility pending down the road for a while. Judges don't usually just throw you in jail or fine you or sanction you in large amounts without a pretty long trail of your willful disobedience of the court order.
Yeah, I mean, usually even on the notice, you know, there's like going to be a notice of the hearing, and on contempt notices, there's usually language right on the notice that says this is a hearing for contempt. You could potentially be incarcerated for failure to pay, blah, blah, blah. Incarceration could happen right at the hearing. It usually says it right on the note.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is if it is a contempt hearing, because incarceration is a possibility, it is one of the, I think, only cases where you're entitled to an attorney at that time. I've actually been hauled in out of the court hallways when I've been down in court on another case and asked by the clerk of the court, would I stand in to represent a client for a contempt hearing because they needed to have an attorney present because they were facing, you know, and that's, if they go out in the hallway and bring an attorney in for you, you know, you're in trouble.
Well, there's that. Plus, a lot of times they'll order an issue, or they'll issue an order to show cause why you shouldn't be held in contempt before they even actually hold you in contempt. Okay, it's sort of like your last ditch effort, your last chance. Okay, show me why I shouldn't, you know, throw your butt in jail. That's what an order to show cause is. And so you'll have plenty of chances to show why you shouldn't have to be thrown in jail. That's why the numbers to me are stunning. Like how could it end up being that many people? You know, when you get so many chances, but it is.
Coming up, more from Rebecca and Susan on Bet You Didn't Know Not Paying Support Can Land You in Jail and Other Contempt Issues.
You know, have to keep in mind is appealing as it is to think of your ex sitting in a jail cell, if they are incarcerated, they're not going to be working. You don't make a lot of money making those license plates at the local prison.
take a listen to our archive, where you can hear Susan and Rebecca discuss more divorce topics in depth, such as, bet you didn't know that adultery can bite you in the ass, even in a no-fault state.
What, was she much younger?
She was significantly younger. And he was, you know, very certain at the time he was spending all this money that this was his, you know, new intended life mate. But what it is,
he thought that she, you know, and I think that she thought that she went very well with his wallet.
Yes, very good.
It was a match made in heaven.
And now we return to today's show.
Yeah, well, and I think the so many chances is an indication of these things don't usually happen that quickly. You know, when you get to a contempt situation, I've always had clients, you know, that come in either after the divorce is finalized or even sometimes while the divorce is going on, but they got some temporary orders of support and they're not getting their support money. So they come in, you know, to the office and they're like, he's not doing or she's not doing or paying what they're supposed to pay. I want my money. And they think that this is going to be a simple, you know, you file the motion, you go into court and in 5 minutes, you know, they'll walk out with their nice big fat check and everything is going to be all taken care of. But it's really not that quick a process. And there's a lot that goes into it. You know, I always tell the client, first off, you have to do a cost benefit analysis of filing a motion. And you know, if they're, how much are they behind on this? What's it going to cost to go into court? And do you actually have the ability to have them found in contempt? Because as Rebecca was talking about earlier, it has to have been willful, meaning they had the ability to pay, but they just didn't. Meaning, you know, for in her example, Rebecca's example, the person had assets, they could have paid it, they didn't pay it. But if the court does not find the person in contempt, then they do not usually have the ability to make them pay the counsel fees, make them pay the court costs. So you, unless there's a finding of contempt, you might be left holding the bag for your attorney's fees and costs. And you know, if you're going into court chasing a few hundred dollars or even a few thousand dollars, you may end up paying a lot more than that. And there's always, always some excuse that the other party has. So although you think it's cut and dried, you, as lawyers, we know when you go into court, it's never that cut and dried. The other side always has some reason why the payment couldn't be made, why they didn't comply with the court order. And you know, you always have to keep in mind that that's going to be an element. The judge is going to hear that too. So contempt findings, at least in my experience, I mean, they certainly happen, but they are no slam dunk in most cases. There's usually an element, for example, you need to prove they had the ability to pay that. Well, Rebecca and I know, we don't just walk in and say, well, I know he's got money. You have to prove he had it. You got to get his bank statements or you got to do discovery and you've got to be able to prove it. Discovery doesn't get done in 5 seconds.
Oh, no. I mean, they usually have 30 days to comply with that. And then even after the 30 days, a lot of times they don't. So you have to file a motion to compel and then go set a hearing for that and then go tell the judge why you need those documents. And, you know, and then you find out, well, they only gave you two of their bank statements instead of, you know, they have five banks that they have money in. They have months that are missing and, you know, so all that stuff ends up taking time to gather to be able
to. And you're paying your attorney the whole time to do that discovery.
Right. So even if there's, you know, one thing I should mention is that even if there's something in your agreement that says, yeah, you have to pay fees for the defaulting party, that means after the whole thing is over, you might get your fees back. So what I mean by that is, let's say it says in your agreement that the defaulting party is going to have to pay both sides' fees. In reality, what that means is you can go hire an attorney to enforce the terms of the agreement, find the other person in contempt, and that whole process, during that whole process, you're paying your attorney all along, because your attorney's not going to want to just work for free, you know, and hope that they get paid at the end of this deal. I mean, they're going to want to get paid all along. But what happens is, if there's language in the agreement that says the defaulting party has to pay, once you finally get to the hearing, then, you know, the court can say, yeah, you were in default. And by the way, I see in your agreement that you're entitled to fees. So let's now do an analysis of the fees, because they're going to make sure that the fees were reasonable in light of, you know, what fees are in that area for an attorney. You know, is your attorney charging $2,000 an hour when every other attorney only charges $300 or whatever it is? And was the amount reasonable for this particular type of case, and then award the fees, and it will become a court order. But there's going to be an analysis done of the fees too before that will be awarded. So yeah, it's great if you can have a default clause in the agreement saying fees will get awarded back to you. That's definitely helpful. But as Susan was saying, the cost-benefit analysis, you know, if the person only owes you $100, it may not be worth pursuing a court case for $100.
Right. Well, and the other thing to remember always is, even if you have that clause, 95% of cases come to some sort of settlement, even motions for contempt. Usually you work out some sort of arrangement with the other side on how the arrearage is going to be paid without having to go to court and do all that. Well, rarely is the other side going to, as a part of negotiated settlement, say, and I'll pay 100% of your counsel fees and costs. There's usually something that you end up assuming in the whole thing to bring it to a conclusion that you can live with. So there's certainly no 100% guarantee that your attorney's fees and costs are going to be covered.
Yeah. And the only other thing I want to mention about that, by the way, is, and this is kind of getting a little bit into some details, but one of the things I really don't like are prevailing party clauses. And so if you ever see that, it's a very different thing than a defaulting party clause. Because if it says the prevailing party will get their fees paid, when are you prevailing? You know, after the appeal? And after you've gone through that whole thing? I mean, you know, that can be a very long time and maybe never. So defaulting party is better than prevailing party.
It is. I agree. There are also, you know, other things about motions for contempt that can end up, you know, to paraphrase one of our earlier episodes, that can bite you in the ass. Because the other thing I tell every client who walks through my door who wants to bring a motion for contempt is that the other side is most likely immediately going to file a motion to modify the court's orders as a result. Because if they're already in court, they have nothing to lose by filing a motion to change the court order. And it usually will bring that about. So most often, you know, the reason that you see someone not complying with a court order is because something has changed for them. The normal example that I give is someone was ordered to pay child support based upon earning a certain amount of income, and then they lose their job. Well, they've had this change in circumstances that means this child support figure that was set was based on their original income, and now they don't have that income. So when you bring a motion for contempt because they're not paying the child support the same way, just expect immediately that they're going to turn around and file their motion to modify the child support based on that change in circumstances. So you may end up with a lesser court order. You also, you know, have to keep in mind, as appealing as it is to think of your ex sitting in a jail cell, if they are incarcerated, they're not going to be working. You don't make a lot of money making those license plates at the local prison. And so how are they, you know, making the money to pay the arrearage that they owe you in the child support? And, you know, something to always keep in mind, and I had a case that was really horrible with this, you know, you have to, especially if it's a child support situation, this is the other parent of your children and you are putting them in jail, or they are being put in jail. And you have to just consider whether that's the right path for your children, that to have one of their parents incarcerated. I had one client who repeatedly insisted on going back to court and insisting upon jail time for her ex-spouse. And it really brought about a lot of problems for her children that she hadn't foreseen. Other children are not particularly kind in some cases. When they find out your dad's in jail, that's not really something at school that's always the best thing for your kids to experience. And then that's what happened in my case. The other kids at school found out, and the kids ended up getting a lot of issues raised because of that. So there's a lot of other things you need to take into consideration when you have that rosy picture of your ex rotting away in a jail cell.
Well, and it's kind of the same along the same lines, is that, you know, they can lose their driver's license or passport privileges and things like that. But hey, if they can't drive to work, they can't come up with the money to pay you either. I mean, I guess in these days of Uber or whatever, maybe they could do that, but it makes it a whole lot more complicated. So, yes, there are lots of things that can be done. Alimony and child support, by the way, not dischargeable in bankruptcy. So they can't file bankruptcy and think they're going to get out of it. The one thing I know for sure in Florida, I don't know about other states, but in Florida, if you file a supplemental petition for modification and then the other side files a motion for contempt, the modification action must be heard either before or simultaneously with the contempt. So you can't be held in contempt before the modification action gets heard. So if you are in trouble and you can't afford your payments anymore, file that action to modify. That will protect you.
Yeah, that's the number one thing I try to make sure all clients understand. It's actually a part of my closing letter to clients at the end of their divorce action, is that there's an entire section that's a notice saying, you know, if there's a significant change in circumstances that affects your ability to meet any of your financial obligations in this agreement or in your judgment, immediately file a motion to modify. Because the other thing that clients do not understand is a motion to modify can only be retroactive in most states to date it's filed.
That is exactly correct.
Yeah.
But it is retroactive. That's the good part. It's retroactive back to the date of the filing. So if there is a change in circumstances that's found, you will get credit back.
Well, you might. I mean, in Connecticut, it's in the judge's discretion to make it retroactive to that date. Now, do they usually? Yes.
Right.
But not always. Sometimes they do it from the date they change the order and have it go forward. But that can be a significant amount of time.
Yeah. So, but at least you have that potential protection. You don't get it from the date that you think your circumstances changed. You know,
right.
So if you lose your job, you know, and this is where I've seen people get bitten in the butt about, you know, several times. And that is, like, you know, I have had guys that have lost their jobs and then they go found, you know, one that's not pay, that doesn't pay as well. And in the meantime, they've been trying to negotiate with their exes about how much they should be paying here and there or whatever. And they think that they're kind of getting along and that they have an understanding. But the truth of the matter is that if the court order hasn't been modified from the court's perspective, it doesn't matter what you guys have agreed on.
No, I mean, it might mitigate, but, you know, I had a client, he lost his job and he stopped paying support, and he had spoken to his ex and she was kind of easygoing about it. And they just figured he was going to get caught up when he found a new job, but he didn't find a new job for a while. She got fed up with not getting any support, so she filed a motion for contempt. And by that time, the arrearage was substantial. It was like $100,000. And when he finally came to me and we filed the motion to modify and had it served on his spouse, it was granted. But he was shocked to find out the judge wasn't going to make it retroactive to the date he lost his job. The judge only made it retroactive to the date that we filed that motion. So he had to go take $100,000 out of a 401k, which meant he incurred not only the $100,000 that, you know, he had to go get that he paid her, but he had to pay taxes on the $100,000 because it came out of a tax deferred asset. And he had to pay a 10% penalty on those funds. And it kicked him, because it was $100,000 and he did eventually get a new job, it kicked him into a different tax bracket. So he paid over and over and over again for that mistake. And that happens. Your best thing that you can do is what Rebecca was just saying, is immediately file your motion when you have the change of circumstances, because that's what protects you. It protects you from the contempt situation. It protects you and lets the other side know that you have a pending issue and a pending inability to meet your court order that needs to be dealt with.
And the other thing you can do after you file that motion or petition, you know, do that first, just so you start getting the protection of the court. But then the second thing is, as quickly as possible, try to get the other side to agree to mediate the issue. Because if, you know, probably 85 to 90% of cases do settle in mediation, and that will be the fastest and most cost-efficient way for you to get a resolution to the situation.
Yeah, you know, really, especially with alimony and child support, these are financial issues. It comes down to, they're a function of the amount of income the other party has coming in and how much income you have coming in. Child support is a formula. So it's really, that's a simple matter of recalculating it through the child support guidelines, which your mediator can do for you. And alimony or spousal support is a more negotiated number based upon factors, but it's still a function of a financial, you know, issue. And those are things that can be worked out in mediation. So you're much better off, you know, going that less expensive and much faster route than going to court, by just sitting down and reasonably working this out. It's a matter of fact whether or not someone lost their job or their income has gone down. Usually, I there might be cases where that's questionable, but mediation offers a lot of upside.
Right. So, and in keeping with that theme, Susan and I are thrilled to announce the launch of Breaking Free Mediation, which is the first mediation company in the country to offer a mindfulness track. So you will have the option to do mindful conflict resolution. And you can find out more about that at breakingfreemediation.com. And as a special gift to our listeners, I am so excited to announce a free gift, which is a meditation. It's a free meditation that you download. It helps you reduce stress and tension. We had it done by Scott Picard, who has been featured in Vogue magazine and LA Times as one of the top meditation teachers in the country. And to get that, you just go to breakingfreefromdivorce.com/free-meditation. And you can just download that right there.
And we'll put that in our show notes for you so that you can find it. So, you know, to sum all this up, just remember that although putting your ex in jail may sound like a very appealing idea, it's a complicated legal issue in almost all cases, and the upside is often much less than you think it will be.
Thank you for joining us today on Breaking Free, a Modern Divorce Podcast. I'm Rebecca Zung.
And I'm Susan Guthrie. For a limited time, get your free copy of Rebecca's best-selling divorce book, Breaking Free, a step-by-step divorce guide to achieving emotional, physical, and spiritual freedom at www.breakingfreethebook.com.
And for your free copy of Susan's Top 10 Reasons to Mediate Your Divorce, visit www.divorceinabetterway.com.
Check back next Monday for our next edition of our powerful, inspirational, and educational podcast. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, please remember to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and let us know what you liked in a review.
And remember, you're just one step away from your new life.